Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, an island show that likes to stretch its lens right across the province, the country, and the planet that we love. I'm Robin Adair, and one of my planetary pleasures every week is to introduce my co-host with the most, the Croatian sensation, John Jurisic. And John, lots going on. And we've been focusing for the last week or two on the pro-Palestinian movement that we've seen marching through the streets of Victoria, Vancouver, streets right across the country for that matter. They seem incredibly well organized, and we've wondered about that. And we wondered, well, how are they so organized and how are they able to pull these things together? And then we stumbled across a fellow by the name of Charles Bodie, who is an online commentator. He calls himself a photojournalist, loves to go down with his camera, down to these protests, see what's happening. And it appears, John, he's not very welcome.
Robin, by the way, great to see you. From around the world, if people wonder why my hands are, I'm holding the globe. Because there are a lot of issues. Charles Bodie and Colwood Councillor Ian Ward have broken a story that some of the Palestinian protesters who regularly demonstrate at the legislature, guess what? They're actually paid for their time. Now, there's no question that many people at these rallies simply want Palestinians to get a ceasefire. So do I. Fair treatment and a homeland. So do I. However, Charles Bodie does say that there's some activists who he sees at all different kinds of rallies and protests. They turn up for everything from saving old growth forests to pulling down historic statues, all in the name of reconciliation.
And we'll have more on all of that from Charles Bodie, because we have a full interview with him coming up here in another week or so. And well, let's start with a little preview. Here's what he has to say about the activists who are so well organized. And why are they so well organized when we see other groups, including business groups, not nearly as busy marching up and down our streets?
The average business owner and the average person doesn't have time for this, right? And if I can go even further, I know this is a really controversial thing, you know, and I think COVID was an accelerant to what we were already seeing. You know, the COVID funding allowed people to stay at home, putting on masks because you're going to fear COVID is a very widely used excuse amongst the protesters as to why they're wearing masks. They say, oh, I'm afraid of getting COVID. So they are always wearing
a mask. Is that what they're saying? Because you see that all the time. And I'm always fascinated.
They say, oh, we're wearing the mask because we're afraid of getting COVID. I'm like, oh my gosh, give me a break, right? Like, if you're that afraid, why are you not wearing masks any other time of your life, right? You know, they're at university, they're not wearing masks. They're all wearing them at just these protests, right? And proximity hasn't really changed. And, you know, if I can go so far as saying that a lot of the names I noticed do work in the public service, you know, they're using alias names online, but they are working within the public service and predominantly within NDP type positions or supported positions, or they're working for local community groups.
More on this issue next week. Fascinating. But again, let's shift to other matters. Housing remains top of mind. Apparently the owners of those teeny weeny Airbnb apartments downtown are having a tough time selling them at cost. After all, who wants to buy a 300 square foot apartment with no parking, barely any ability to sit for $500,000? Prices are coming down.
I think they have to, John, and you wonder why they allowed them to build them so small in the first place. They really have to shake your head. At the same time, there are some much bigger projects that are actually on the planning board and up for discussion at City Hall. And will they get approval? That's a big question. This includes the massive Bayview proposal, which is on the Upper Songhees. And it's a big project at stake. Victoria Council has been holding hearings, no decision yet, but we'll keep tabs on the project. And it'll be a massive change to the landscape and the look of Victoria's Inner Harbor. And we'll keep an eye on that and other housing in general here in the Rumble Room. And of course, Down the road, just in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to have Tony Joe here. He's a prominent realtor in town. He's going to talk about housing prices, and he's going to talk about the inventory in 2024. Can't wait to talk to Tony Joe. And I guess now, John, as we swing away from real estate, we're going to bring in our big guest for the week.
Yeah, absolutely, Robin. Mark Gardner is a first-term counselor who's finding the going pretty rough and rumbling at City Hall. She's not part of the NDP majority that is driving a lot of the policy under Marianne Alto, and she finds it pretty discouraging. She says she's on council to serve without an agenda or political objectives. Let's hear more and zoom her in. Now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room for the first time is Victoria Councillor Mark Gardner. Happy New Year, Mark.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming on board. It appears that there's a real disconnect in Victoria. We have a council that makes promises to be inclusive, listen to the public, but in practice has taken steps to actually limit consultation and discourage naysayers who want to address council. You've written about this in an op-ed letter to the Times columnist published before Christmas. Have you had a lot of reaction to this publication, your letter?
I've had both positive and negative reaction, mostly positive from people I meet. But first, I think I want to say why I wrote it, and that is the general public, and maybe you folks too, have trouble keeping up with absolutely everything because it's these little minute changes that add up to big changes down the road. And so that's why I tried to create a bit of a summary on how in the last year, the voice or the opportunity for voice in the public has changed so much.
Now, right? the governance is, of course, a big part of the discussion that you've been undertaking. And this is a council that seems to be very, very focused on a particular agenda, a number of agenda items they're really intent on getting across. They tend to center on things like transportation, i.e. cycle and the bike paths and things like that, housing, how people in general should be living their lives in comportment. And there's lots of promises, things like new low-cost rentals, which the city is pushing through with a lot of enthusiasm. And, you know, they are making it more difficult for people to ride around in their cars, because I think there's a general belief if they can dissuade people from using their cars, that's better for the environment, so much the better. And they'd rather have people riding buses and bicycles. In your mind, is this all really the purpose of a city council?
A part of it is the purpose, but the real purpose is to meet the needs of all the residents, not just the select friends, shall we say, that are of like mind. And I have been raising at council many times about the gray-white tsunami coming forward of so many elderly as our baby boomers come through the system. That means the next 20 years. And that's going to be a lot of people with mobility issues and a lot of people who find the car very much a necessity. And that even contrasts with my kids who don't live here, by the way. They live in Vancouver, who both thought they'd be living car light and car free lives until baby number two came along. Then they discovered putting two car seats in a moto doesn't work very well. And you know, they really had to start using a car in order to have a quality of life that they needed and to ensure that their kids could get around places. So I think that this belief that we're all going to be living as some do in Europe just won't be happening. We don't have the density. We don't have the light rail transit. We don't have the population base here to support it. And even beyond your own city, in Europe, the transit systems between cities and between areas is so fast and so frequent and so good that it really doesn't apply to Canada, where we're such a huge country and we're going to have those huge distances and people don't want to wait 2 days for a train.
Yes. Well, both of you have allowed me segued beautifully into my question. Speaking of bicycles, Mark, I want you to know that I'm actually a triathlete. If I were to lose about 150 pounds, but I'm not today, but I do have an e-bike and I ride it quite religiously because I like to stay alive. Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in bike paths in that I use them and access for those who want to ride around the city. But I also believe there needs to be balance. The vast majority don't regularly ride their bikes to work. In my past life, when I was working in locations around Saanich and Victoria, I tried riding my bike to work. It's really, really complicated. Anyway, millions of dollars of taxpayer money has gone towards these bike paths and narrowing of city streets. At the same time, there's talk about charging a modest fee to leave your bike at the concierge area beside City Hall. I love that service. I use it. I've got no problem if I was asked to be charged for it. And I live in Saanich, by the way. Some members of a Victoria Council are totally opposed to the opinion I just stated.
Yeah.
But don't riders actually, I feel, don't riders have a responsibility to pay something for the privilege of riding around all over the Lower Vancouver Island, including Victoria?
Yes, and I agree fully. And I was the person who asked that question initially, such that the mayor put that on that list. And by the way, people talk about anti and pro bike lanes, and I believe that there is, you may use the word balance, but the approach I took when it came to my neighborhood was the one initially proposed was not going to serve our neighborhood. So we consulted with our neighborhood. In other words, we need bike lanes, but bike lanes that serve the neighborhood. And that's the way I looked at it. So I think we need the bike lanes. I think they're very important. And I don't want to be separated from my kids. And believe me, you have no idea what they do to me if I was anti-bike. But there should be a bit of a cost associated with it. And I had been to a Salvation Army fundraiser and saw this nice little, you know, you use your credit card and it went as low as $5 on that so that you wouldn't have to have cash. And if you look at the kettles that were out there at past Christmas, they also even have the same system. So they are relatively starting to go cashless. We also have BC Transit, which has cards. I mean, you can have all kinds of ways of doing it. And I think it's important that we do something in this regard.
And every little dollar helps, I guess, and that the bicyclists are being asked to contribute and join the rest of us taxpayers. Perhaps they should start thinking about doing just that. When you campaigned for council, Morgan, and I had a chance to go through some of your campaign material, because a lot of it's online, which is very handy. You certainly made a priority of public safety and cleaning up our downtown and fully supportive of the five pillars, helping people downtown with addictions and mental problems and all the other things that go into our street population. And this, of course, in the bigger picture, includes treatment centers. It includes places for the hospitals and treatment centers for the mentally ill and all of these things, which the city can't possibly pay for. All the city's paying for, and they're paying a lot, is for the policing. But unless the province and the feds put up a lot more major funding for all of this, it's never going to happen. Do you find this all very frustrating? Because it seems to be going in a circle all the time. More committees all the time, and nothing seems to really get done.
Oh, I'm very worried about not only committees, but some of these not-for-profits who, when they get money, then recommend and support another not-for-profit getting money. So we have these circles upon circles going on. But I think we even have a bigger problem in Victoria beyond the fact that we, on the peninsula, have more that are sheltering in our parks and on our streets, is that we're only 12 square kilometers of land. And we cannot be taking all of this for the region. And this is so important. And that is a major problem. And our past council, and to a certain extent, our current council, has been accepting it and welcoming more and more. I asked for the number compared to a year ago. And since the first week of December of 2022 was compared to 2023, the number of structures, in spite of all those motels and all those other things, has almost doubled. So we had 60 some in 2022 and over 120 something. I don't have the exact number right now. So it's almost doubled. People don't realize that. And so I think, yes, we are not getting support we need from the governments, but I think we are also not getting a collaborative approach from the various municipalities around us. And we need that. They have more land.
Yeah. Mark, it's no secret that both Robin and I come from the Chamber of Commerce ecosystem. Both business people, aren't we, de facto, aren't we all business people, really? Nonetheless, the Downtown Victoria Business Association has been promoting recently the Save Our Streets, or SOS, initiative. Jeff Bray has spoken on our show about the hard work required to rebuild business in the downtown. We've heard that the annual cruise ship business, for example, used to be called the icing on the cake of Victoria business. But more recently, we've been hearing the cruise ship business is the cake. So, in your mind, should council be spending more time, more effort, more focus on the business development and enhancement file?
I'm going to switch this a little bit, if I may, divide it into two different topics. And I understand that, of course, the initiative of the SOS one, the new one of safety on the streets, is, I think, going to be a very good movement and involves more than one municipality, which is great. The grab and thievery and thuggery going on is very detrimental, not only to our businesses, but to the residents that live here. For example, I was at my local grocery store a little while ago, and sure enough, I saw people leaving with product or with, you know, bags of things without paying. And staff can't get involved. They put themselves in harm's way. So we have this safety problem is real. And it's not only downtown, by the way. What I mean is not only downtown. A lot of people think downtown is just the old part of downtown. At City Council, we've had so many discussions and inquiries and what have you with businesses that are in downtown, but shall we say north of what people think of downtown. In other words, on Princess Avenue, further north on Douglas, there's major problems in there. There really is. And so we must remember that. So it's not just even within the DVVBA area. It's a lot of businesses and a lot of residences. And so this has to be a high priority. And again, I've been harder on it, shall we say, than many councillors. And I think that is because I have endured more. I live part of the lifestyle the council is promoting, but do not live. I live in a multi-residential dwelling. I live within walking, shall we say, the 15-minute city concept. And that's important, but at the same time, you have to realize that what's happening in areas where I live and downtown. And I don't think any other councillors live in an area that has sheltering done within sometimes feet of where they live.
We're moving into a new year. The council's been operating for a few years now. You've got a chance to sort of size up the issues and size up the people you're working with. Can this council work more effectively? Is there a way going forward that you can work more collaboratively as a group? Or is it always going to be camps and squabbles over issues without some important resolutions getting decided in a general consensus?
I'd like to split that into two areas. First of all, if collaboration means that I have to become more of a Marxist, that will never occur. And Karl Marx has actually been referenced at one of our meetings. So I am pragmatic, and I'm not dogmatic. And I don't take an ideological approach. And as I said, to be frank, I'm not a Marxist, never will be. And I want our democracy actually to be strengthened. And right now, I do not see that happening. But looking forward in 2024, we have two items that are January, February, March, right up to April. And that will be budget discussions. The tax load, as you know, is predicted right now as being 54% over 5 years. But that does not include the costs with huge projects, which have been identified as being wanted down the road. So in the budget on certain pages, you'll see to be decided. But those have not been worked into those percentages. And so I think the budget could be very, very major. And we have not yet elected the police budget. And I hope we do not see more of a defunding type of approach again this year. Because I experience so much of what I am experiencing, I very much value our police.
And we'll certainly hope for smoother sailing for Mark Gardner and Victoria Council in general, we wish them all well. And, you know, for the record, we have heard on occasion from Downtown Victoria Business Association CEO Jeff Bray that he actually has a good working relationship with members of this council. He says from all sides, they come to see him regularly, talk about the issues. He finds them very open and willing to listen. So let's hope that spirit of cooperation continues. And also, John, a quick salute to John Wilson and over 200 volunteers locally for all the work they've done on putting together the Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada, which has now landed in Victoria. And that's big news. It includes an outdoor rink in the Inner Harbour, book signings at Monroe, an all-star NHL celebrity game, and national TV coverage on Sportsnet. And are you going to have the Stanley Cup and the Grey Cup for football appearing here on our blessed shores? And so all happening as our cold weather starts to dissipate, but a lot of warm hearts about hockey, John.
John Wilson, Robin, is a colleague of ours from the Chamber days. He's literally a one-man economic development machine. John Wilson, thank you for everything you do for our city and our region. Great to see the city rally around hockey for a few days, and a nice way to end the show. So to all of those joining us and being one of the upwards of 1.6 million viewers we've had since we started this project 2.5 years ago. I actually had hair. I was quite a bit thinner then. I like to say that about any year that it is, Robin. We really appreciate, in fact, maybe I'll have to pull out a picture that actually shows that I had hair and that I was thinner. Nonetheless, we really appreciate your support. And you can see the show on the following platforms. Facebook is our engine. It is where most of our views come. We're also on Twitter, which frankly is also generating a bunch of views and comments. I can't believe it. All of the shows are on YouTube. We also have a podcast. For those of you riding your bikes in leisure and want to listen to our show, you can. And we're also on Instagram, where I don't know who, you know, there are people there too. And they're watching the show that via that platform, as well as TikTok. Whoops, maybe I'm hungry. TikTok. And with that, I remain your Croatian sensation. By the way, I'm being called that now on the street. Hey, sensation. Anyway, my name is John Jurasic.
And that's because you're so sensational, John. I'm Robin Adair. I'm Johnny's spear carrier as we march into battle every week and rumble on.